This is Doug Diamond. Anthony had asked me to do a quick introduction of Dane Wigington of geoengineeringwatch.org. He did so because he knows that Dane and I are very good friends, and I have been working as his website administrator and video and audio editor for quite a few years, since 2014. I love Dane like a brother. He's a very good man. He is quite a family man. That would be one of the things I would describe him most as. He loves his family, and he loves our world. He wants to see a change for the better, and he knows that geoengineering is wrecking the planet. So it's with this sense of urgency that he approaches this entire issue, and you will get a real feel for that in this interview with Anthony and Kathleen. So let me read his bio just so you have a little background on his history. Dane Wigington is the executive producer for the groundbreaking climate engineering documentary, The Dimming. He has a background in solar energy and was a former employee of the Bechtel Power Corporation. Dane was also a licensed contractor in California and Arizona. His personal residence was featured in a cover article on the world's largest renewable energy magazine, Home Power. He owns and manages a wildlife preserve next to Lake Shasta in Northern California. Dane made the decision to focus all of his efforts, his energy and resources, on full-time investigation of the geoengineering solar radiation management issue when he began to lose very significant amounts of solar uptake due to ever-increasing solar obscuration and global dimming. This scenario was being caused from highly visible and ongoing jet aircraft spraying and aerosol dispersions. Dane also noted a significant and accelerating decline in overall forest health, along with rapidly increasing UV radiation levels. These factors and others were catalysts that triggered Dane's testing and research into the geoengineering issue for the last two decades. As the lead researcher for geoengineeringwatch.org, Dane has investigated all levels of geoengineering, solar radiation management, and global ionosphere heater facilities like HARP. Dane has appeared on an extensive number of interviews and films to explain the environmental dangers we face on a global level from the ongoing climate engineering assault.
Good evening, everyone. Anthony Patch here, and I'm joined in studio with Kathleen, my wife. And also, we have a very special guest tonight whom many of you have been aware of since 2017, September 2017, we produced a webinar entitled Full Spectrum Dominance. And at that time, we were joined by Dane Wigington, who once again is our guest this evening. And he has graciously given us some of his very precious time. He's a very busy researcher and also presenter of his own research and information by way of YouTube, but I'll allow him to make his own opening curriculum vitae statement here. But I just wanted to let everyone know here as our friends in these live streams that we do three times a week that we typically do not interview other people. This is very unique for us, but it is a indicator of how much respect we have for Dane as an individual, as a researcher, and as someone who is trying to save humanity, much as you all are doing as an audience, as a group of friends who also are trying to save humanity from itself, if you will. Kathleen, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, Dane, welcome. And I know that a number of our listeners have asked us many times questions with respect to weather events that are happening. And so in talking with Anthony and some of our listeners, we know that this, you know, speaking with you is a real blessing to us, because I think it will go a long way in helping answer some of the questions that are on, I know, our minds as well as our listeners. And, you know, even if the news is not all that great, being forewarned is being forearmed. And I know that that will alleviate anxiety to a certain extent when you can sort of anticipate what's going to be coming.
Yeah, and just as a final comment, and I'm going to throw this over to Dane. This is an audience that is very well informed. They are very much aware of what is going on with the environment. This is something that we do talk about in our own live streams, based upon research that they send to us. So just so that you understand the demographics of who you're speaking with, you can speak at a much higher level than you typically would with the general public, because they are researchers in their own right. So at that point, I just want to turn it over to you, Dane. I'm going to mute my microphone for technical reasons and turn the floor over to you, sir. Go ahead.
Well, the same gratitude back to both of you, Anthony and Kathleen. This is your platform, and helping to reach your listeners is helping to move this fight forward. And I'm very grateful to both of you for all your ongoing work towards battling against the insanity that we find ourselves drowning in by the day. In regard to the ongoing climate engineering, climate intervention, aka weather warfare operations, it is my hope that more, as you two are doing, I hope more online, more sources, more sites, more individuals address this core factor in the entire equation of the horizon that we face. And it's being overlooked or ignored to a large degree by many that are addressing other issues that need to be addressed. But again, we need to look at the wider horizon of the background of what's happening in our skies, because if other agendas that are ongoing at this point, and we all know what those are with CV19 and so forth, if those don't pan out as the controllers plan, they can alter the mix in our skies to make it much more lethal and toxic than it already is, and they could level the playing field overnight. I would welcome the interaction of the questions you two have, anything, everything, so that I can fill in the blanks that you most want to have filled in. And two points I want to make first, and then I'll go back to you for whatever questions you want to start with. But from any perspective, there can be no legitimate discussion about the climate without first and foremost addressing the climate engineering, climate intervention operations. And in regard to those operations, there can be no legitimate discussion without addressing the ability of the climate engineers to engineer toxic surface cool downs with patented processes of chemical ice nucleation for weather modification. And we have a whole section on this at geoengineeringwatch.org, including some of the climate engineering patents that create this endothermic reaction, energy-absorbing reaction in cloud moisture, and thus create a cold, dense layer of air that descends to the ground. Various forms of frozen material are created depending on the conditions, from massive hailstones to cotton ball-like, quote, snowflakes that are very different from naturally nucleated snow. And these processes create a weather whiplash scenario that we see happening now all over the globe. And this aspect of climate engineering is not being acknowledged by every other or any other source or site that claims to be fighting climate engineering, claims to be trying to expose climate engineering, but yet we see, unfortunately, those same sources and sites pretending that these engineered cool downs are somehow natural. And that's unfortunate, because that's a major part of the climate engineering operations. But the entire hydrological cycle is being derailed. The ozone layer is being decimated. Climate engineering is the core causal factor. The ozone layer collapse alone is an extinction-level event if these processes continue. And we are on a very short timeline. So, Anthony and Kathleen, is there any specific questions you'd like me to kick off with?
Well, as a good husband who is well-trained by his wife, my wife has a question for you regarding biblically, and not to put you on the spot, but biblically, some of the effects that are presented in Scripture. She would like to ask you a question, and we do not operate in the mode of ambush journalism around here.
Never.
We never do that, and we respect you too much to do anything underhanded or to put you in a position that would be awkward. So go ahead, Kathleen.
Okay, it's just really two things with relating to what our Lord had told us, you know, coming out of Revelation and some of the stories that Jesus is recorded as having spoken to his disciples. And that is referencing, as you know, the winds and the seas raging, the earth teetering like a drunkard, and also him mentioning that the sun is going to be burning people's skin, which I think would have would be in relation to what you're talking about with respect to the ozone. So my question is two part. When he is talking about the sun burning people's skin, the reasons for that, again, could be thinning ozone. It could be allowing more radiation in. But the other is, what circumstances would cause the earth to teeter?
If we look at the climate engineering scenario as a whole, it should be, must be considered the single greatest human assault against the whole of creation. And this is why it's very perplexing to me, and I know others, that there are no spiritual institutions addressing this issue. In fact, I've had personal communications with all the congregation leaders in Northern California from various traditions and factions of those traditions, none of which are willing to address this issue, and the whole of which has told me initially that they don't need to worry about this because it's all in big hands. And I know that you both know that Scripture does not allow that, doesn't allow you to sit in a pew and warm it with your backside while this is going on. And unfortunately, that's the position so many have taken. In regard to this, the rest of your question, again, we're derailing climate engineering more than any other factor. And I'm not stating it's the only factor, but more than any other single factor, it is completely disrupting and derailing the entire life support process of the planet. And the erosion of the protective layers of the atmosphere, again, is an extinction level event by itself. And there are other traditions that have foreseen what's coming. I would cite the Hopi Indians, who stated in the time of great change there would be cobwebs spun in the sky, and that certainly looks like these aircraft as they're dispersing their particulates in the sky. So again, in regard to the total disruption of the planet's life support systems, there is no factor that has a greater effect than the climate intervention operations. In addition to being highly toxic as well, the elements we know are toxic. We have lab tests from all over the globe. And this is why, again, must we not focus on the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat? Of all the other challenges we face when the planet stops supporting life, when everything is contaminated beyond any recovery in any time frame that matters, is that not the most pressing issue we face? And to plug this into a wider horizon that would fit into your question even more, Kathleen, when we know that, again, climate engineering is eroding the planet's protective layers of atmosphere, when we know that now we are much more susceptible to a CME, coronal mass ejection, i.e. solar flare, like the Carrington event in the 1800s, and that would shut down grids all over the globe, that would prohibit nuclear plants from being able to cool themselves. Now we have massive nuclear cataclysm. And the rapidly rising sea levels, with so many nuclear facilities at sea level as well, now we have more meltdowns to add to the equation. There's some 440 nuke plants all over the globe that will melt down on the current course. So, again, from every conceivable direction, climate engineering is pounding the nails into our collective coffins in the same theme as your question.
So, with respect to, and I appreciate your highlighting that, it is so important. And I know that Anthony and I not long ago watched a movie about what happened Chernobyl, and it was very, very sobering. And certainly that could be the standard that might be met by other nuclear facilities around the world if you know, there's no change of course. But I know for our listeners, again, if we could have you perhaps address what might be some of your understanding that would cause the Earth to teeter. You know, the Anthony and I were talking, and I said, you know, and I'm not trained as you are, but in my thinking and from what I have read and, you know, books that we have studied together, you know, what if, for example, the core of the Earth, you know, the magma at the center of the Earth is really being stirred up. And that's not hard to believe because so many volcanoes are exploding around the world. But if the core were to heat up to that extent, that would cause some shifting within inner Earth, that would cause shifting within the oceans when the water starts moving. There was a sloshing effect. Is that along the lines of perhaps what we have read about that would cause the Earth to teeter like a drunkard?
Well, again, there's many ways to interpret that term, and I would, from my standpoint, based on our available data, I'm trying to plug that into the climate engineering equation. In regard to the increased volcanism, we do have enough data to state that when a concentrated radio frequency microwave transmission is focused on a specific region, it can cause heating in the strata, if you will. And we are seeing on satellite imagery a correlation with what appears to be RF microwave signals, for example, on La Palma, and an ongoing eruption scenario. When we have, for example, in Fukushima, when we have institutions like MIT stating on the record, your listeners can look this up, that they monitored what they called extremely anomalous atmospheric heating directly above the epicenter in the days prior to the quake. They don't know how this occurred because they won't acknowledge the ionosphere heater installations like HARP. Your listeners, I'm sure, all know what HARP is, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, an acronym that's not meant to mean anything, to help cover the tracks of what that facility does. And there's perhaps 100 of that type of facility around the globe right now. They can bounce the signal off of the now reflective atmosphere, thanks to the climate engineering electrically conductive particulates, and they can beam this back down to the strata of the planet. So in a seismically sensitive zone, based on what we know about this technology, they can absolutely create seismic activity. So in regard to any core heating of the planet, we don't have any data that would correlate that with climate engineering at this point, but that in regard to surface strata, that is not the case. We do know that these signals can and are very capable of creating seismic activity and perhaps possibly triggering volcanism. And again, what we see on radar, the ripple effect around La Palma, which the so-called climate science community labels as gravity waves. And again, they label anything they can in a way that tries to cover the tracks of climate engineering operations. So the full degree of what they're doing in our atmosphere, we can't know. But based on what we do know, it's completely alarming. And again, in regard to the specific term you're using, what I would translate that to from our perspective is just simply a disrupting and derailing of the planet's life support systems. And in regard to the type of planetary reaction that you're relating to, we have many factors in that equation, and it is impossible to separate the degree to which each factor is in play. You have thermal expansion. So as the planet is heating, and it is radically heating, we have oceans in parts of the Arctic Ocean that are 25 degrees Fahrenheit above historical normal. We have glacial rebound. So as the weight of the ice is lifted off of land masses, for example, like Greenland, they begin to rise up off the seafloor. And all of these factors are affecting the equation. It's impossible to separate which is doing what. But in general, even in addition to the climate engineering insanity, clearly the human race has been incredibly poor stewards of planet Earth. That's inarguable. So it is our hope that most people addressing climate engineering, again, many of the same groups and entities and sources and sites that are not recognizing, not acknowledging the engineered winter weather cooldowns, are also not acknowledging the rest of human activity and the decimation it has caused the planet. They take a position that there's, one would think their conclusion is almost that there's nothing wrong with the planet except climate engineering. And then in taking such a position, they alienate the whole of the environmental community, the whole of society that recognizes we have been poor stewards of the planet. And then those, that segment of society then will not look at climate engineering because they feel the conclusion is being presented is not valid because it doesn't include the entire equation. So it's a complex equation, no question, but the intentional climate intervention operations have prevented the planet's life support systems from responding to the damage done. So we are in a much darker corner than we even otherwise would be.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, we do understand that whenever man tries to play God, it ends with very disastrous results. And
correct.
So I do hope that this discussion tonight is going to quicken a lot of people to see what they can do individually as well as collectively.
You know, we kind of do things a little differently in our live stream format. So in keeping with that difference, I'd like you, Dane, if you would, to let our audience know something about your research, your organization. As a researcher of 10 and a half years now of this global engineering that's going on, your organization is geoengineeringwatch.org. And as I said, about 10 and a half years of research and presentation. And if you could give a little bit more about yourself so that they understand the authority with which you do speak and you have been speaking, I would appreciate that.
Well, thank you for asking on that, Anthony. It's actually, yeah, geoengineeringwatch.org has been a source officially since 2009. But prior to that, our work was ongoing as well. So we have almost 20 years in on this now. This is not a job I wanted. I'm not an activist. I'm not politically oriented. But having moved to Northern California, I wanted to get out of the Southern California smog from the time of my earliest memories. And when I got to Northern California, built an off-grid home, solar, wind, and hydro, a home which was on the cover of the world's largest renewable energy magazine. That's my background in solar. I work for Bechtel Power, a very nefarious company that I left at an early age because of what I saw. But I wanted to get to clean air. And after I completed this solar system and moved into this house, and was losing massive amounts of my solar power from whatever aircraft were emitting over our airspace, which clearly could not be condensation, I would lose on some days 50, 60, 70% of my solar PV uptake. That doesn't mean that the sky is 70% dimmer or there's 70% less light. It means that 70% of the sun's direct rays are being blocked. Solar is very sensitive to any blockage of direct sunlight. I knew this couldn't be condensation. I began to do lab testing at the state-certified lab. I did not want to find what I found, which was aluminum in the precipitation. Aluminum does not exist in free form in nature unless it's been mined and refined and dispersed, because we hear this as a quote, debunking argument from many of the so-called science sources that are tasked with trying to hide the tracks of the climate engineers, that aluminum is an abundant element. It's a large part of the Earth's strata. We should expect it to find it everywhere. No, it does not exist in free form. It is always bonded to other elements. If it's in free form, it's been mined, refined, and dispersed. And we had single rain events in my early testing that went as high as 3,450 parts per billion of aluminum in the rain. That's highly toxic rain. So much aluminum has fallen in precipitation over Northern California. We've done about 70 lab tests in this region alone. So much aluminum in the precipitation has fallen that it has altered historical soil pH values 10 to 12 times toward alkaline. The entire forest is dying here, and it's not just here. It's all over the globe. Some soils are more sensitive to this material in the precipitation. That is because of our normal historical acidic soils here. That's what these organisms are adapted for. So we've seen soil pH values go from 5.4, 5.5, up to 6.6. That's an extent of 12 times. 1 point on the pH scale is a magnitude of 10. So our forest here, again, is dying by the day. There is no forest smell because the trees have shut their stomata, the respiratory ports that allow them to feed, that allow them to uptake carbon and release oxygen. They are not respirating. This is happening all over the world. The Amazon forest, now thought to be the terrestrial lungs of the planet, is no longer a carbon sink. It is a carbon source. It is emitting more carbon than it absorbs. Many reasons for that. They're burning down the forest as well, but the trees are not respirating. So back to climate engineering being a total derailment of every conceivable aspect of the planet's life support sources, because in altering the soil pH, and we know that aluminum is toxic to root systems. We have peer-reviewed study to prove it. It causes root systems to shut down nutrient uptake. The trees begin to die a slow, protracted death. And what do we see, quote, official agencies blaming the tree mortality on? Beetles. It's just the beetles. And that, again, is a blatant, glaring lie of omission. Beetles are a symptom of a sick organism. That's all. If the organism was healthy, they would pitch those beetles out. They would not be a problem. They never have been a problem. Then we have the nucleated snows occurring in the forest on the already weak and increasingly brittle trees. I've done a number of videos on this under our Into the Wild section. And documenting this heavy concrete chemical nucleated frozen material that coats trees and sticks to them like cement and topples them all over the forest. Again, weakened root systems, weakened trees, literally obliterating what's left of the forest. We've had conditions here in Northern California, literally last spring, go from 75 degrees on one day, next day, chemically nucleated concrete snow that starts falling at 45 degrees, and the temperatures do lower as this process continues because this material is very cold to the touch because it's chemically nucleated. Next day, 75 degrees, all this material gone, but the forest devastated from this chemically nucleated material. So from every conceivable aspect, again, climate engineering is decimating the web of life, ubiquitous contamination all over the globe, every breath we take, every human subject that we test, hair, blood, urine, packed with toxic heavy metals. Is this not the core causal fight that core factor that we must deal with, or nothing else will matter? Nothing. We'll have a lifeless planet and a population that is contaminated beyond any functional ability. It's reducing our cognitive ability. We know IQs in the US, for example, have dropped 8 to 10 points. That's a staggering drop. And we have fluoride contributing to that. We have other factors. But again, every breath we take is laden with materials that are known to cause neurological damage and decline, starting with aluminum.
Thank you for that, Dane. I wanted to let the audience know that your latest video that you posted, and I believe you post a video once a week, if not more frequently, was the latest video is December 4th on YouTube. And the title of that is Planetary Asylum. I appreciate your choice of word there, asylum. We're all about defining words and terms here on our live streams. There's a deep meaning to asylum.
Madness.
Again, from Geoengineering Watch. And your YouTube channel is Dane Wigington, which is spelled W-I-G-I-N-G-T-O-N, Dane Wigington. So I would encourage our audience to look at your channel. Also go to your website, geoengineeringwatch.org, for just a vast amount of research, not just videos, but papers that you've produced, research that you have posted that you alluded to here regarding aluminum specifically. Taking some notes and some excerpts from Planetary Asylum, you made the statement of drowning in a sea of total deception. Now, you may or may not be aware of this, but that fits right into the Bible, with God giving them over to a strong delusion. So that fits in with your drowning in a sea of total deception, and we can address that in just a moment, if you would, please. But we're about solutions here, and that's what you also are offering. And you made a statement here that just jumped off the page for me. And it's the following. True solace only exists in summoning the courage to fully face the gathering storm head on. Let me tell you, my friend, you are echoing exactly what Kathleen and I have said along with our audiences, having said the same thing with respect to Scripture and the full armor of God, and takes us back to the live stream that we did with you in 2017 regarding the full spectrum dominance, the dominance of technology. But boy, that is the solution in terms of psychologically, how are people going to deal with what we've presented, what you're presenting today? And it's having the courage, just flat out having the courage to fully face the gathering storm.
Yes, I would argue, are we not here for a reason? And what greater reason could there be than to rise to this equation of what's happening to our planet? In regard to people having the confidence to address this issue with others, they need to be certain of the verifiability of this occurring. And let's start with this in regard to the, quote, condensation trail narrative. Again, a narrative of total deception. We have up-close film footage of these aircraft at altitude, military tankers and commercial, retrofit nozzles visible on the wings turning on and off. End of discussion. It is not condensation. Condensation does not behave in this manner. All commercial aircraft and all military tankers are fitted with a high-bypass turbofan jet engine, a jet-powered fan. 90% of the air that moves through that engine is not combusted. That engine, by design, is nearly incapable of producing any condensation trail except under rare and extreme circumstances. We have up-close photographs of the nozzles, again, mounted on the wing pylon aimed to the exhaust jet stream. We have the claim by the so-called climate science community at times that this is just a fuel dump. What a ridiculous narrative that is. They're not going to dump fuel, as if we should feel good about a fuel dump, by the way, like that's benign, or to atomize fuel and dump in the atmosphere where it settles to the surface. Extraordinarily toxic, but somehow they tell us that as if that should put us to at ease or to rest. But that is clearly not the case. You don't dump fuel into the exhaust jet stream. So again, the proof in regard to what's happening in our skies is absolutely irrefutable. We have Senate documents up to 800 pages long, government documents. We have patents going back to the 20s. There's a long and very connected chain of data on this issue. So back to people having the confidence to address this. Are we not required to do so scripturally? Does not Scripture say, before you knew your sins were washed away, now that you know your sins remain? We're required to face this issue. Absolutely required to. You cannot turn away. And that's what's so perplexing and troubling about the so-called congregational leaders here in Northern California, from many factions of not just the Christian church, but other traditions as well. And again, I'm not faulting the whole of Christianity, but I'm saying we have a great percentage of it that is behaving scripturally in a way. Another scripture comes to mind for me as well. I'm very familiar, or fairly familiar, with biblical scripture. I think of this one. Did I not prophesy in your name? And Christ says, I believe, get away from me, I never knew you. Is that not applicable to these spiritual leaders who are turning two blind eyes to the greatest assault against creation ever launched by the human race? Let me give another example, because I'm sorry if it seems like I have a bad taste in my mouth. I do. I gave, when I was financially able, when I was younger and still actively conducting my contracting business in Southern California, and I gave $30,000 to Calvary Chapel. Yeah, you guys are familiar with Calvary Chapel, Kathleen?
Yes.
And Anthony? Okay. And I knew some of the leaders of that church, and I thought they were doing good work in the community. I gave them $30,000 to buy a parcel next to the existing church in Hesperia, California, so they could expand their operations. When I called them, these church leaders from Calvary, to communicate data about the climate engineering issue, they wouldn't even return my call. How's that for hypocrisy? And the same from the so-called environmental groups, exactly the same behavior, because in both cases, they're trying to protect their 501c3 nonprofit, and they don't care about how grave this issue is. They don't want to lose their nonprofit status, and that is, to me, inexcusable in both cases. Our attorneys from geoengineeringwatch.org have communicated with attorneys from all the major environmental groups, WWF, Greenpeace, Sierra Club, 350.org, all of them, Earth Justice, none of them will address the climate engineering issue because they don't want to lose their 501c3 nonprofit. So they pretend the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat isn't there, and they go on about arranging deck chairs on the Titanic. So the hypocrisy is immense in many, many arenas. And if that doesn't change, we face near-term planetary omnicide. And I accept whatever my fate is, so long as I know that I can face myself in the mirror and face my maker and know that I did my best. And I accept that. But the bottom line is we're in a very real and immediate fight for life, again, from every breath we take to the absolutely cascading collapse of all of Earth's life support systems. We are on an extraordinarily short timeline on the current course. And I would give this mathematical example or these mathematical examples. Statistically, in the last about 40 years, we've lost 70% of Earth's wildlife populations. We've lost 80 to 90% of Earth's insect populations, terrestrial and aquatic. Geoengineeringwatch.org was the first major site to publish that. We had the whole of the science community trying to marginalize that conclusion, and now they've all had to admit to it because they can't hide it any longer. Ozone layer collapse, we were the first major source to publish our work there. And again, the same type of attempt to marginalize, and now they're having to admit to that. There's more and more data surfacing about the extraordinarily high UV levels on the surface. So what we have is the whole of academia that is so incredibly moralless, morally bankrupt, programmed, and controlled at this point that we, again, we're back to the planetary asylum, literally, and not just the climate science community of academia, but the medical industrial complex. We know how incredibly bankrupt morally that group is now as well. So again, we're in the fast track to a planet that's a lifeless ball of rock spinning through the hostile environment of space. And I accept my fate so long as I know I've done my best. But I know so many people, so many who know the severity of what's unfolding, and yet they continue to go about their lives as if they have no responsibility in this equation. And that's very troubling to me.
You know, I'm going to say something that's going to sound somewhat fatalistic, but know that I have faith behind me to back up this statement. We are never going to be just hurling around out in space. God has other plans for his children. However, the world is going to suffer in the interim. This is something that no human being is capable of turning around. You know, whether you stop burning fossil fuels or you stop spraying aerosol, this is not something that can be turned around by humanity. It just can't. Anthony and I have always said that you cannot separate the spiritual from the physical. And what is happening in the spiritual realm right now is having its outworking in our physical world. That alone, if you believe that statement, should drive home the point that things are very, very serious in the spiritual realm that are now having its outworking in a very, very powerful way here on planet Earth. And so people, I think, that love God and everything that he has given to us will continue to treat the earth with respect as we can, not because people are telling us to do so, but because we know it's a gift from God. So we will naturally be that way. However, we would be neglectful to not acknowledge what really is at stake here, our governments. And when we talk about weather warfare, it's not just against humanity. Humanity gets caught up in it. But these are governments that, and I'll just take a hypothetical situation. China doesn't like our trade rules. So they use their weather warfare systems to cause, incredible floods in the desert in Arizona. we don't like what they're doing, so we send clouds over to China and have it rain for 45 days, hoping that a dam will break and, you know, cause major problems in China. There is warfare right now taking place, and they're covering over it by, you know, getting these Greta people, these little kids and these talking heads, to come out in the media and say that mankind needs to be more responsible with respect to, what's the term that they use?
Carbon emissions.
Well, carbon emissions, but I mean, what is the whole general terminology that's used there for not weather warfare as we're talking about it? Climate change. You got the climate change agenda. So you have all these heads of nations that will come together at these summits to talk about what they're going to impose on their countries in terms of taxes and changing, you know, to try and do something about the weather. That's all a bunch of bull, because really all they're doing is they're creating this agenda to cover over what the governments are doing, and that is literal warfare without the general populations realizing that it's warfare. They're warring against each other using weather weapons. But yet everybody in the world is being told, oh, no, it's because of climate change and global warming. They're using that as an excuse to justify their weather war behind the scenes so as to not upset the general population or even let them know that they have these capabilities.
So if I can intervene on that, I do want to need to, from my perspective, from our research and our data, to point out what that data supports for a conclusion. It's not China causing rain in Arizona or the U.S. causing flooding in China. They are all colluding and cooperating on these programs. China couldn't do anything that affected our airspace without our government allowing it and facilitating it. In regard to CV-19 and climate engineering, all major powers are colluding and cooperating on this issue. It cannot be otherwise. We have, again, historical documents, some hundreds and hundreds of pages long, confirming that global cooperation with governments that are otherwise adversarial. So regardless of the illusion that's painted on the surface tensions between governments, again, some of which may be real, because we have even normally cooperating mafia families that have tensions, but they are all colluding and cooperating on climate engineering. And here's the issue with that, and this is imperative to understand. Again, I've expressed my disdain for the environmental groups, but that does not mean that if we stop climate engineering that we are in any way out of the woods on this issue. We have triggered feedback loops on this planet. Every form of human activity. Again, we're going through 100 million barrels of hydrocarbon a day. 100 million barrels. And CO2 is absolutely a problem. Yes, it's essential for plant growth. It's essential for life in many ways. But when there's too much, too fast, no more. Water is essential for all of us. We can't go more than 2 or 3 days without it. If we're 10 feet under, we're not going to last more than a few minutes. And we have other gases like methane. And this is where, again, they try to confuse, divide, and polarize populations on the methane, relating it to, you know, cow flatulence and so forth. The bigger methane problem, the real methane problem, is formerly frozen methane hydrates and clathrates that are now thawing and releasing and blowing into the atmosphere. This is what the Bermuda Triangle ship sinkings have been for decades. Seafloor, formerly frozen methane hydrate deposits that thaw, release in their entirety. That's how those methane fields release. Once they release, they tend to release in entirety, aerates the water like a bottle of champagne. Ships go down intact. That's exactly what has been happening. Now it's happening on a colossal scale in the Arctic. Methane over a 10-year time horizon is 100 to 120 times more potent than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. So again, every form of human activity is a part of this equation. That's essential to remember. I do understand that they've used, you know, someone like Greta to push a certain message that is woefully deficient, to say the least, completely omitting the single biggest factor in the equation, but not that factor does not outweigh all other factors combined. We've cut down the forest, we've paved the planet, we've poisoned the oceans, and all of those are factors. That's where this equation needs to be remembered, that it is complex. And we don't face global warming. You're correct about that. It is exponentially worse. What we face is more correctly scientifically termed an abrupt climate collapse, being further fueled by climate engineering. And this is where the cooperation between governments matters. And you're correct, Kathleen, that these climate conferences are nothing but facades. You're completely correct on that. Behind closed doors, they are further pushing the climate intervention operations as a form of masking the damage done to the planet while using weather as a weapon, not just against, not opposing countries' populations. This is our own governments participating in weather warfare against their own population. That's imperative to remember. We can see them on satellite imagery cutting off the flow of precipitation from the U.S. West. We can see them, and that is not Chinese aircraft. That is U.S. aircraft. We have flight tracker to prove that. So we have governments inflicting weather warfare against their own populations, and they know, they are all well aware of the fact, acutely aware at this point, that they can no longer support their own populations. And they are, I would argue, unquestionably in countless ways thinning the herd. It was not going fast enough with all the methods by which they were affecting populations, again, fluoridated water and all forms of toxic food. And now we have the protocols for CV-19 that continue to be ramped up at warp speed. They are behind the curve and they know it. They know that, again, they can't support their populations. They're all colluding and cooperating on this. They're all trying to mask the severity of done to the planet. This is a core part of climate engineering. They're trying to mask the severity of damage done in order to keep business as usual until the last possible moment. And in their effort to mask the damage done, they are inflicting yet more damage. Why should that be a surprise? That's the pharmaceutical industrial approach to planet Earth. How many pharmaceutical commercials do we see take this for that particular symptom? But by the way, here's the side effects that are so long, and side effects are actual effects if we look at that rationally. The side effects are so long, you wonder who in the world would take that pharmaceutical. And that's the mentality behind these programs. So in regard to the cool downs, what do we see on the cool downs? We see sensationalized headlines like the blizzard that just was touted in Hawaii. So we have blizzard in Hawaii. We have temperatures in Montana and other places that were 35 degrees above normal. We don't see much about that. So they sensationalize the cold, cold, cold headlines. And what do we hear from so many, and even alt media, alternative media? They jump up and down and pretend that's proof of, quote, global cooling, which is the exact narrative the climate engineers are looking for from them. To confuse and divide the population, pretend the planet's cooling and not warming when it's in total, absolute meltdown. What we see on temperature readings, which we monitor, we routinely see an extraordinarily high underreporting of temperatures. So we see 3, 4, 5 degree underreporting. What's that mean? It means that it is far hotter already on this planet than we are being told. When they engineer a cool down event, Anthony, Kathleen, you remember the Boston snows that were touted in 2014, all the cold, 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 and all the Boston snows. Remember that?
Yes. Yes.
What was happening at the exact same time? 14,000 feet up in the Sierras, we had far above freezing temperatures in winter and no snow, nothing. 14,000 feet up in Boston Harbor, we have film images of frozen sea surface in Boston Harbor with seawater that was 40 plus degrees. How in the world does that happen? Seawater doesn't freeze till 28.4 degrees. And I hope it's apparent that I'm not shooting from the hip on any of this. I know these statistics inside out, upside down, and backwards. You can't have frozen material on 40 degree plus seawater unless there's a chemically nucleating element on it. We see the same thing happening in the Arctic right now. Did you guys see that? The ships that are stuck in the Arctic right now, did you see that?
Yeah, there's, I think, four of them.
There's actually about a dozen and a half now, okay? And this is in a particular region near Russia. Okay. And that has been highly sensationalized, picked up by all the same sites and sources I mentioned as proof that there's no problem with the Arctic. We're heading into global cooling, they say, none of which could be further from the truth. So how do these ships get stuck in the Arctic when in September of this year, was the lowest Arctic ice mass, i.e. the volume, ever recorded by far? how do these ships get stuck on the ice up there then? It's a surface nucleation, and we can see it on satellite imagery. We've captured it on satellite imagery. We have full report posts with those images under the engineering winter section of geoengineeringwatch.org. It looks like a chemical spill on the sea surface, because that's in fact exactly what it is. It nucleates the sea surface, creates all sorts of strange phenomenon. Your listeners, I would encourage them to search Lake Michigan ice balls, 75-pound, perfectly spherical ice balls, literally covering beaches in Lake Michigan. And we have the so-called science community trying to explain that away with complete fabrication. There are these, we're seeing the same ice balls on shores in the Arctic. This is when you get a core of nucleating material, it builds up around that. That's why we have the massive hail, same thing. And again, these are patented processes. We're not guessing on any of this. We have lab tests in some of our engineering winter section at geoengineeringwatch.org, where you can see a beaker of water with this type of element dropped into it, a couple drops. It freezes the whole beaker instantly. Ice nucleation is a very profound science, and we're seeing snowfall in regions we've seen in recent years, even places in the southeast, in Florida, in one case several years ago. Snowfall documented at 50-plus degrees. How does that happen? Chemical ice nucleation is how it happens, and the temperatures do drop. We recorded snow at Mount Shasta, Northern California, I think 3 years ago. The ambient temperature had not been below 30 degrees at that point in the fall. There was snow on the ground, and that snow was 15 degrees. That can't happen unless there's something very unnatural about that frozen material. And we know, we've tested it. We know it has surfactants in it. It has all the usual climate engineering elements, starting with aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers, highly toxic snow. So again, at this point, nothing, no weather can be considered natural in any way, shape, or form. The entire system has been totally derailed. But what I would argue is essential, and again, I have great disdain for the environmental groups, absolute disdain, and the whole climate conference thing is nothing but a hoax. And yes, Greta is being used as to further polarize populations. I fully agree with you, Kathleen. But what I would argue is this, again, from any perspective, from any side of the fence, there can be no legitimate discussion about climate engineering about the climate, the state of the climate, without first and foremost addressing climate engineering. And no legitimate discussion about climate engineering without addressing the engineered cool downs they can and are creating. Hope that makes sense.
So the chemical ice nucleation is you've described it in your videos as a endothermic reacting element. These are elements that are sprayed that endothermic, meaning that it absorbs heat energy into itself. So you're describing something that is being sprayed on the surface of the ocean, sprayed in the atmosphere, and it is sucking in the heat in the environment, thus creating these nuclei, if you will, these centers that then build up moisture, build up water around the nucleus. Due to its colder temperature, it's able to solidify the moisture into an ice crystal. Is that a fair summation?
Very, very on target. Thank you, Anthony. Yes, that's exactly on target. And we saw here in 2012 major winter weather engineered assault. We had snow that started falling at, that was actually December 21st, 2012, profound date too, interestingly enough. But we saw the frozen material start to fall at 40 plus degrees. Temperatures dropped precipitously as this process continued. But it never got below 30 degrees. And we had on our ponds, I have a lot of ponds on my habitat preserve here, there was 5 inches of ice over pond water that was 40 degrees with temperatures that were only below at 30 degrees for about 2 nights. The next 4 weeks, approximately, the ice remained and the reaction was so profound that it was gassing the water right out of the pond. The pond water dropped precipitously below this layer of ice, and about 40 degrees at night for the next 4 weeks and about 60 in the daytime. Again, pond water, 40 degrees. How in the world can you possibly have so much ice? And we had a lot of locals with ponds that know nothing about this issue that were very perplexed. So again, their ability to, at unimaginable cost to the environment as a whole, to carry out these operations is beyond profound. And if you could explain to people, they know that they see the ski slopes that have, that also use some of these nucleating elements, where you have no snow on the mountain, but you have a slope full of snow on the ski resort. Same process on a much bigger scale. We captured a satellite image of a stripe of snow across flat, completely flat topography in Kansas. There was a stripe of snow 10 miles wide, 300 miles long. Now, how could that possibly happen unless that's the dispersion below an aircraft that flew over the moisture in that region? Nature doesn't make a stripe of snow across flat land 10 miles wide and 300 miles long. So, I mean, the red flags are glaring beyond belief. Now, before I forget, because we're going to be back in the wildfire season from hell soon, and I want to point out, on the wildfires, that is absolutely the most core causal factor is climate engineering, cutting off precipitation to vast swaths of forests, northern and southern hemisphere, regardless of the source of ignition. That's another subject completely. Because as I've stated many times, any moron with a match can start a fire. But what's setting the conditions for those fires to burn with such ferocity? And that's absolutely climate engineering. So back to Kathleen, what you stated about what we're falsely being told from the so-called environmental community and the climate science community, you're correct, again, in that in regard to the cause of those droughts and those forests being so profoundly in a state where they burn with, again, this ferocity. We have climate engineering at the core because on a rapidly warming planet, our planet's in full-blown meltdown. It appears to us by statistical data, we are past 3.5 degrees C of warming right now. Not the 1.5 that the so-called climate conferences claim we're going to try to stay below or to. That's all complete fabricated data. So a planet that's warming must have more overall rain. It must. The laws of physics make that clear. 3.5 degrees C or more right now. 7% more moisture is held in the atmosphere for every degree C of warming. It should be raining much more overall on planet Earth, and it's not. And the reason it's not is because of climate engineering completely thwarting the evaporative cycle. So in regard to the fires, how does that serve the geoengineering agenda? We have a report with that exact title. I would really encourage your listeners to look. It's one of our most important reports ever. I'll weave this back into the Arctic ice in a moment. Search Wildfires Serve Geoengineering Agenda. We found peer-reviewed science study that advocates for the incineration of northern latitude forests to provide temporary cooling for the Arctic. Can you imagine the insanity of that? It's a form of artificial volcano because it loads the atmosphere with so much particulate matter that spins toward the pole because of the Coriolis effect of the planet, the spin of the planet. And it provides temporary cooling. So what happened this year? And let's look. You guys know that by chance, Kathleen or Anthony, that with all the fires that we saw burning in the U.S. this year, did you know that Siberia lost over 40 million acres?
Yes, we do. Yes, we were watching some of those fires. They were quite remarkable.
You're way ahead of the vast majority, and that doesn't surprise me because you guys are on top of your game. So all that particulate matter, again, spinning toward the polar regions, and we had acknowledgement from the climate science community that this particulate matter helped provide lots of sun-blocking material. So we had, from record low Arctic ice extent, that's the surface area. You have the mass or the volume and the extent. We're absolutely at record low mass or volume. It's remaining record low and getting lower by the day. But we had record low extent also in July. And suddenly by September, we're at the 12th lowest year, a radical rebound. And we have an acknowledgement from the climate science community that much of that was because of all the particulate matter that blocked the sun in the Arctic. Think of the level of insanity we're dealing with, that they are willing to incinerate forests to provide temporary cooling for the Arctic at the cost of ensuring that we have no part of the planet's life support systems left to continue with. That's the level of insanity we're dealing with. That's a form of artificial volcano. And we covered in the case of the Car Fire in Northern California in 2018, we recorded on Flight Tracker an aircraft owned by, we ultimately found the core owner was JP Morgan, flying a grid pattern exactly over the car fire burn area. I mean, in perfect, very symmetrical grid pattern 2 days prior to that fire starting. What are they doing? Are they laying out the areas they're going to incinerate? It certainly would appear that's exactly what they're doing. And again, the blaming of the incinerations or the epic drought or the cutting off of moisture, especially in the U.S. West, to blaming that on global warming is patently false. The core causal factor for the epic droughts and the epic burndowns is climate engineering. That is not to say it wouldn't happen otherwise, but not to the degree it's happening now. And again, overall, you must have more rain on a warming planet, not less. We have less. And the reason is because climate engineering is blocking direct sunlight, which starts evaporation. It affects convection because of this reflective layer in the atmosphere. It radically affects convection, which again affects wind, which again affects evaporation. And the effort that's being gone to hide this is absolutely profound. I've had personal meetings with Gavin Newsom in the Capitol. And his top aide presented data to them. They absolutely know this is going on. But they're tools for the power structure. It mattered not that they had this information. They've done everything they can to cover it up. I presented data to the California Energy Commission at the Capitol. And at that meeting, their scientists, which we presented data to from geoengineeringwatch.org, they voted for and approved the purchase of a $200,000 spectrometer to identify the, quote, chemical composition and origin of particulates that they knew were blocking 20 to 40% of the state's rainfall. They knew this was a problem. So they purchased this almost $250,000 instrument from Scripps Institute. It's never been seen or heard from since. Gone. At every level, if a fire starts to burn, it is stomped out, systematically stomped out by those who control the money. I've had an interview request from BBC, USA Today, New York Times, National Geographic. The list goes on. They never reach fruition, never, because they are a boot gets put over the neck of the reporter that's trying to cover that report. National Geographic reporter, I had 3 hours on the phone with him, total of about 6-7 conversations. He knew this was going on, was trying to weave it into a National Geographic documentary under tree mortality, and he got completely stomped on. It's the effort, obviously, to hide this is immense because of populations all over the world, and back to what we can do and what we should do, regardless of what may be inevitable, Kathleen, I would argue again, we still have our responsibility to remain at our post until we're relieved. That is our responsibility. I'm sure you both would agree with that. And I intend to do exactly that. So the bottom line is, if we collectively can bring this issue to light and can bring it to a halt, we would at least allow the planet to respond to the damage done. And no matter what, no matter how immense this task is and how futile it might seem, it is still our responsibility to try until our last breath. And I've had scenarios that I think you guys would both agree with this too, and sorry I'm ranting so much, I'll give it back to you in a moment. But I've had scenarios, in fact, fighting fires in a dozer. I was the only one on the ridge here in 2008, and fire lapping up the sides, and I thought there's no chance I can stop this fire. I mean, it was the most helpless, hopeless feeling I've ever felt in my entire life. I shared it on one of my broadcasts. I was on a D6 Cat, and that lightning, those fires were started from relating to climate engineering. Again, lightning ionizing the atmosphere, making it more conductive. It was a beta test of some sort in 2008. It's directly related to their experimenting with how to slow Arctic ice meltdown. But I felt, excuse me, something in my throat here, but I felt that there was no chance I could stop those fires. And by the end of the day, with trees exploding above my head, and the cavalry finally came at the end of the day, for all the good they were worth, the Forest Service and Cal Fire. But I was able to keep the fire on the side of the ridge, and a lot of habitat is left now because of that. And I don't know how that happened. I really don't. I mean, I just want to relate this, Kathleen, to what you said about but certain things being inevitable. But I would argue, if we do our part, and that's the point I'm trying to make, if we do our part, however hopeless the odds might seem, we're not alone in this battle. And I know you guys would agree with that.
Absolutely, we do. We chime in wholeheartedly, and this is what the message we've repeated many times in our live streams as well. And I like the way you said it, and that is remain at our post to the end, because we always have presented and encouraged our audience to view themselves as soldiers in the fight, and that we are on the battlefield right now, and we have been. I'm talking about our audience collectively. We've been on the front lines. We will remain on the front lines because we do answer to our Creator. We do answer to our Father. And I know Kathleen wants to make a comment here, but that imagery is very powerful. Remain at your post. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Yeah, we cannot look to our world leaders for the changes that we would like to see because they are caught up in the world system and agenda. And again, I know you don't mind us speaking to this, and I always tend to have my bent, if you will, go back to God and what He's doing, especially in these times. And I know in Scripture it talks about God being very, very specific when He is directing His commands toward what we, you know, if you would perceive it as evil, we would call it Satan. And God is very, very clear about what the guidelines are, and they are clearly not paying attention, which in one sense, for those of us who are anticipating the return of our Savior, we can look and say, keep doing it, because you're going to just hasten His return even quicker. But He tells them, do not harm the grass of the earth or the trees. And they are not listening to that. So, you know, granted, I mean, humanity is important, and we're all connected. I mean, we can't live without a healthy environment. I mean, that's God created everything to be, and I know it sounds New Age. I don't mean it to sound New Age, but harmony. We were all, I mean, our environment was built to, you know, for us to perfectly live in. And that is so unbalanced right now, and to the point where it's causing everything to come to its demise. But the hope that we have and our listeners have is that hope that because we see the world not paying attention to what God gave as directives to not harm the living things, you know, the green of the earth, the plants, meaning the plant life, the grass, the trees. I mean, it's bad enough that they're doing this to humanity, but God also gave very clear directions not to do this to the world. This is only going to hasten His return and His, it will only hasten Him coming back to set everything right, more so for humanity, but also to reset. You know, they're talking about a reset. God has His own reset in mind, and it's coming a lot sooner than anyone thinks. As much as you are saying these cataclysmic events are further ahead than they ever want to give credence to, well, that is also indicative of our Lord and what He is going to do to reclaim His earth. Unless, if He allows this to continue, no. So biologically, ecologically, this is going to be hastening His return. So yes, stay at your post. I agree with you. We will do what we can. Unfortunately, we cannot go to our world leaders because they are not the ones who can solve this problem.
Completely agree with that. This is where, you know, people's notion that they're going to get some new elected official to put things on the right track. And I mean, that is simply to feed the system as it is. And I am completely with you on that. This must come from a grassroots level, a critical mass of awareness, especially. And again, I accept whatever comes. I'm with you on that. I just know that I cannot, again, face myself in the mirror, face my children. I couldn't face my Maker if I wasn't doing everything I could in this battle until my last breath. But I fully agree with you. The notion that people are going to find some remedy through the elected officials that are bought, sold, paid for, sold out. I'm with you 100% on that. And that's where people, where they feel helpless, and with this tidal wave above our heads, and they shouldn't feel helpless. And again, we're not alone in this battle. And as I tried to portray at the end of The Dimming, that any one of us can be the final pebble that triggers the landslide of awakening. And if people arm themselves with credible data, we try to make that available at geoengineeringwatch.org for, it's actually less than our cost of producing and shipping. We're simply trying to get into circulation. The printed materials, have I ever sent any of those to you guys, Anthony and Kathleen? Our 20-page booklets, for example?
Yeah, back in 2017 when we were doing the webinar, you had sent that to us.
Okay, I'm happy to send more if you need them, but they're available on our homepage for your listeners. Again, it's at or below our cost, and that is exponentially more effective. Our 20-page booklets, if that doesn't wake someone up with the images, copies of federal gag order and all National Weather Service and no employees, I mean, how big a red flag can we have? Why would you gag the weatherman if there wasn't something incredibly massive to hide? But those tools are extraordinarily effective at waking people up to this issue, especially now with the climate chaos going further off the rails. I mean, we're seeing weather whiplash all over the globe. I mean, it can go from 70, 80 degrees to snow the next day. We had a case in Texas, Amarillo, Texas, going back several years. They went from a 100-degree all-time record high on May 1st. This was in 2013, I think, but we're seeing the same kind of cases now, to snow the next day. How do you go from 100 degrees to snow? We've seen Denver in the recent years go from all-time record high of like about 85 down to 12 degrees in 24 hours. That's not nature. That's chemical ice nucleation. It creates a layer of cold several hundred feet thick, or, you know, in that realm. Denver's a basin, so they use Denver for that type of process a lot because the basin holds the cold air. But again, the climate is blowing apart. The planet's life support systems, i.e. creation, is blowing apart. And these tools can be the key to the door to waking people up. Printed materials. We have flyers as well. And if people can help start spot fires of awareness in their circles and encourage people they wake up to do the same, we could reach a critical mass of awareness. And again, whatever is inevitable, we could do our part. And I know you guys agree that we're required to do our part until we're relieved from our post.
Yeah, that's the command. That's the commandment. We must do our part to the end. And I agree with you just from, you know, a moral aspect, just as a human being with a sense of morality. How can we look at ourselves in the mirror? How can we look at one another? How can we look at the children inheriting the planet from us? How can we look at them without taking, at least in a small part, as an individual that can have a ripple effect, that can be the pebble in the pond to an awakening of a larger number of people that will in turn create an exponential reaction against this global engineering that's going on in this weather warfare? It definitely can happen, and we have to give it all with that hope that it will have some effect. That's why we have you on today.
Thank you for that. And I want to back up again what Kathleen said earlier too, and about global leaders. And I totally agree with you, Kathleen, on that. They have been very
definitive, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
I agree.
And again, you're in agreement with us. There's two things I wanted to bring up real quickly. I love what you are saying in your presentations, in particular at the abrupt climate collapse scenario. I mean, that's a soundbite. That's a takeaway. If you would address your view of the timeline, and I have a sense of it from listening to your presentations, but the word abrupt. And then the next part that I'd like you to address is your, in summary, your part one and part two interview with the NASA, former NASA contract engineer, a fitting name, by the way, Ray, talking about UVC and UVB, if you would, please. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. I'll get to those two points in a moment, but I want to back up again on what Kathleen said, and I'm completely in agreement. The hypocrisy of world leaders pretending that they're fighting, quote, global warming, while they're flying around in their private jets, while people like Al Gore have no solar in his home. And, you know, the hypocrisy is immense. And I would argue, though, what they have done is by design, and that they have made a huge segment of the population justifiably hate them and hate their hypocrisy so much that they no longer rationally look at the facts regarding the wider horizon. They simply take the opposite position of those people because they feel that they don't want to agree with anything those people say, so therefore the opposite must be true. And I hope that changes, because that's, I would argue, is actually a part of the plan for people like Al Gore, to make people hate him so much that they take the opposite position. They no longer recognize a lot of the data that's valid. In regard to the amount of ice that's there, I would encourage people to watch a film called Chasing Ice. Decide with your own eyes. Cryosphere is disappearing by the day. Climate engineering is making it worse, not better. Back to a timeline. Based on statistical trajectories, if we remain in the current course, by mid-decade, this decade, we would face, at the current rate of loss, total ozone layer collapse, game over. That doesn't mean that you instantly die or disappear. It means you could stay in your home, but you can't grow food. The terrestrial life of the planet is done. Most aquatic life is done. And that's already happening, by the way. Plankton, which is a staple for all life on Earth, is about 60 to 70% decimated now. Plankton has to feed in the upper layers of the water column because it photosynthesizes and the UV is slaughtering the plankton. Now, there's many other factors. We've poisoned the oceans. Recent release of data revealing that our government allowed 500,000 barrels of DDT to be dumped off the LA coast in the Catalina Channel. This is business as usual, dumping nuclear waste. I mean, we've trashed this planet. But the UV radiation alone is an extinction level event. Current trajectory puts total collapse about mid-decade, along with a lot of other converging catastrophes. I mentioned the wildlife populations earlier. On the current rate of loss, we face statistical zero hour for no functional wildlife left on planet Earth. That doesn't mean there wouldn't be any specimens at all, but it means no functional populations left 2026. Global pelagic fish populations collapsing. We face Canfield Ocean right now, lifeless, stratified, deoxygenated oceans, dead zones. All of this converging about mid-decade, this decade. Those in power know it. They are playing their cards right now. They're likely to play much bigger cards soon as their desperation continues to magnify and escalate. We don't have much time, not much at all. And the feedback loops, I want to make that clear again. That's a very key part of the equation. And methane is a key feedback loop to examine. So as this methane thaws and releases, your listeners should search Siberian methane craters. That will shock them. Look at the images of the methane blowing out of Siberian tundra. You have to see those images to believe them. Looks like a nuclear bomb went off, exploding into the atmosphere. As this methane enters the atmosphere, causes more heating, causes even more methane to release, you can see it's called a positive feedback loop. Same with the ice. Arctic ice, or ice period, reflects 90% of the sun's incoming thermal radiation. Seawater absorbs 90%, complete antithesis in that equation. That's a feedback loop. We lose more ice, absorbs more heat, we lose even more ice. So we are on track right now for what's known as Venus syndrome. And that's a scientific scenario. It's not a metaphor. Your listeners can search geoengineeringwatch.org Venus syndrome. They'll find a full report on that subject. Bottom line, we don't have much time. And again, as hopeless as it looks, I would argue that there are likely factors. There are factors in this equation that I believe, and I know you two believe, that we cannot begin to comprehend, that are in our, that we need to at least consider and remember always. And again, we're back to the same Same equation. No matter how daunting the tidal wave is above our heads, all we're required to do is exercise our will, our God-given will, correctly, morally, honorably, virtuously. That's all we're required to do. But we need to do that, and very few are. So I hope that equation changes. And again, this drama is playing out very rapidly, Anthony. So I hope that fills in the blank. I hate to give any dates because I can't know those dates. There's too many variables in the equation. But based on current trajectories, mathematically, statistically, mid-decade would be about as far as it appears we're going to get at best on the current trajectory.
Yeah, and there's a lot that is going to happen in the intervening years.
Fully agree.
We look at La Palma, we look at the earthquakes. There's a YouTube channel you might want to take a look at. It's called The Two Preachers. Mm. The Two Preachers YouTube channel, about once a week, they will post video clips of various environmental disasters that take place
all around the world.
So again, it bolsters your position. And if you're able to, just as a reminder to kind of review very quickly for us, UVB and UVC.
Yes, I'm sorry, you did ask me that. And you know, if I could clarify what I stated about mid-decade also, that doesn't mean, because you're correct, a lot of things will happen between now and then, you're completely correct. In stating this zero-hour trajectory towards mid-decade, that doesn't mean, as you correctly alluded to, that things keep going more or less as they are now until then. Doesn't mean that at all. We are on the verge. Any given day, our whole reality can and likely very soon will go upside down long before mid-decade. I'm just stating that, again, a zero-hour trajectory points at mid-decade in that regard. And back to the – on the UVC spectrums, we are told 95% of incoming UV is UVA. We're told 5% is UVB. We're told UVC stops 100,000 feet up in the atmosphere. Absolute, total deception. We're seeing up to 10 times more UVB than we're being told, and we're seeing extraordinarily high levels of UVC on the surface. UVC is the last spectrum of UV radiation before X-ray. I think we know how harmful that is. So it's a DNA damaging spectrum of UV radiations, killing plankton, killing insect, killing trees. It's frying the bark off of trees on the exposed side, and depending on the specimen and the location, it's radically affecting photosynthesis. We're talking about a planet that, again, is not going to support life much longer on the current course. So we're getting, yes, extraordinarily high levels of UVB in the surface and UVC as well. We should post a second part of that. We exchanged with the NASA contract engineer, possibly, if not this week, next week, we should have that up. And that'll provide more current data on our metering there. And we meter with state-of-the-art equipment that we provided to this engineer. And think of the whole so-called climate science community that won't say anything about this. None of them. I don't have any words for the hypocrisy or the moral bankruptcy. I don't.
You know, I just wanted to add very quickly, and then Kathleen's going to jump in. We're surrounded by trees. We live here in New Hampshire, small town. It's a logging town. And I took a walk with a logger a couple of days ago, and he was pointing out to me that on the southern exposure side of the trees, the damage that's being done. And I said, is that UV ray damage, or is that a fungus? Is that a parasite? Is that a beetle, so to speak? He said, it absolutely is UV radiation damage. So what, I'll take your question.
Okay, I'm sorry. You said Kathleen has a question. You want me to fill in there?
Yeah, go ahead and respond to my statement, then okay. Kathleen's going to.
It's encouraging that the logger knew. That's encouraging to me, because many of those in that vocation that make their money off the loot, plunder, and pillage of the forest will not acknowledge such a fact. And again, with even quote-unquote sustainable logging, I live in a region that has been completely altered due due to logging. When you take all the prime specimens out of the forest, when you remove anything from the forest, you're removing something from the forest. You're removing those trace minerals, elements, all that soil composition that's been absorbed into that organism. But when you take the whole canopy off and you allow the understory to explode into the fuel ladder that it is, it's completely altered the composition of the forest here. And I've done 6 major habitat restoration projects here. My father was an arborist. I know about trees. And again, there is quote-unquote sustainable logging is a really kind of an oxymoron in a sense, in the time frames that matter, and because you can't just keep taking from the soils indefinitely. But it's encouraging to me that he noted that. And here in Redding in Northern California, the trees are fried from in town. So many specimens are fried from tip to trunk. I mean, fried to the core wood. And nobody notices. Nobody cares. Agencies won't admit to it. I know people within these agencies, they won't admit to any of it. I've been in the field testing soil pH values with top scientists from the USDA who I know. They won't admit to any of it. They sheepishly look at me in the woods here and say, well, what do you want us to do about it? How about manning up? How about doing your job? And they won't do it. They're concerned about their paychecks and pensions. They won't do it. So let's all just pretend the ship isn't sinking until we're sitting on the bottom.
Yeah, I'm taking violin lessons.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's funny. We recently, the logger that Anthony was talking to, we had to have a tree removed from the front of our house. And when we bought this house, we saw that the tree was starting to die at the top. But then from the middle down, it was green and lush, and it's pine. So these are not wimpy trees. These are, and I know you know, being out in California, they're pretty hardy.
Yes.
And so I said, you know, Anthony says, we're going to have to take that down. And I said, no, I really like it. Let me, you know, I'll put fertilizer in and we'll see what we can do about, you know, maybe see if we can keep it. So it really started to look healthy, didn't it?
Yeah, for a few months. And then this year,
toward the end of summer last year, everything on it just sort of fried. It was that brown, burnt, and then this year, nothing, not one green thing on this tree, not one. So, yeah, it was discouraging to take it down. But I just want to encourage you because I know that you are doing what you are called to do. And I applaud you that you are so diligent, and it doesn't go unnoticed by those of us who share your great love and respect and admiration for what God has given us in this world. You know, we've all had those moments, you know, when you're either hiking or walking or just being able to look out across this beautiful world that He gave us and all of the things that He put His mind and heart into in the creative process, you know, and to appreciate and value that. And He knows that you're doing that, Dane. And I know that He is pleased with your efforts to stay true to the end. And, you know, your timeline for what you're talking about, you know, with respect to our faith system would lead us right into what we know and have said is the greater part of the tribulations that this world is going to endure. And that is biblical. So we will, as soldiers, continue on with this fight. We will probably see some small victories. We certainly have the ability while we are here to put up roadblocks. And I agree with you. You know, we need to be hyper-vigilant. If we see, you know, something smoldering in the forest, to make efforts to put it out or to always be on alert so that we can spot these things. Quite frankly, we're the only ones that have that ability and are tuned in enough that we would pay attention and even look for, because we are, in a sense, watchmen. So we are looking and for these things as they come upon the earth so that we might warn others. And there will be many who don't listen. We're seeing that right now. You know that Anthony and I, with our faith base, with all that is happening in the world. We are watchmen in other areas. You know, this is your specialty. We have areas in our life that are our primary focus. But nonetheless, it's a call to arms, so to speak. Not physical arms with weapons, but these are weapons of another type of warfare. They're using and bragging about their weather warfare. We have spiritual weapons that are very, very powerful, to the pulling down of strongholds. And we will exercise that, you in your area, us in our area. And we will frustrate the plans of the enemy, because he will not be able to continue to march forward, you know, with full conquering mode. He'll never have that. He thinks he will. Evil thinks that it will succeed. But in the end, good wins, God wins, but there's a lot that has to happen in the interim. But I don't want people to ever feel defeated, because we're not. That would be run absolutely contrary to what we profess and believe in. You know, we are on the side of victory. We will be triumphant. So continue to be doing what you're doing. I would say, if God were looking to you and saying, you know, well done, good and faithful servant, because you are taking up, so to speak, the knowledge of arms, if you will, in being able to expose the great injustices that are being done to this world. And you stand as a light, a beacon, with all that is going on. And so I just want to encourage you to continue to stay the course. You know, having done all, stand. And we will stand beside you, fighting for similar yet different things. But we will do this until our day of redemption.
Thank you for all that, Kathleen. And knowing that there's individuals like you and Anthony in the world, it keeps me marching forward in this battle. And I will remain at my post until my maker relieves me. Count on that.
Dane, we'll just wrap it up here. Thank you for your 2 hours of your precious time, because I know that you're always very busy. Please let people know how they can best support your efforts, both at the information and the financial level.
What we most need is help sounding the alarm. And again, we try to, we make our materials available for actually below our cost of producing and distributing. And we print in massive scale. So these, it's quite a value what we pass on. And we do all the packing here, and you know, our family helps to do that, and we ship all over the world. But these materials make it exponentially easier to wake those around you. They're available on the homepage, or you can print your own. We put the PDFs available on the homepage so people can print their own if they choose. It's just, if you don't print in huge quantities, it can be very expensive to print the type of quality materials we print. So we just print them in massive quantities, pass them on at actually below our cost, just to get them into circulation. So I would argue again that if the exponential equation, if a person successfully woke two around them on the first day of a 30-day month, and those two each, or those two individuals woke two each the second day, and so forth for 30 days, we're into many millions. It's 5 or 6 million after 30 days. The equation can go exponential if we simply all pull together and with confidence that we are doing what we are meant to do here, that this is not something that should be, that we should turn two blind eyes to. We don't have the right to do that. Our maker does not allow us to do that. So again, I only ask for the help in sounding the alarm. Help us to reach a critical mass of awareness. And there's, again, data on the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org, including an activist suggestions link to give further instructions in that arena. Please help us to sound the alarm. And again, my deepest gratitude to you two for all that you're doing and for helping to give a voice to geoengineeringwatch.org.
It's our pleasure.
It's our pleasure, and it's our honor to speak with you. And Dane, I just want to let you know, before I ever became a public speaker, which you said at the beginning you never intended to do what you're doing today, nor did I ever have the intent to do what I'm doing today. But I do remember before I went public, back in 2012, I was listening to you on the radio, terrestrial radio. I was in my car, and I was so impressed, as I am today, and even more profoundly impressed with what you have persevered in doing. I know that you've come under tremendous attack from the scientific community, from the media propaganda machine, from the government itself. And I just want to say, as a friend, having been introduced to you so many years ago on the radio, so impressed with you. It's just an honor to stand alongside of you on the front lines doing what we both have been called to do. God bless you, my friend.
The feeling is very mutual for both of you two, and we march together in this battle, and with all your listeners, all of us side by side marching in this battle. Thank you both.
We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you, my friend.
Bye, Dane.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.